Welcome to the Home Tech Podcast, show number 8 for January 20th, 2011. I am again tonight here with my two faithful counterparts on the left, because we're doing this live in Skype, which is kind of cool for the first time. Now, if you're listening, you can't. We had this problem last night on the home server show, but you can't. We're not streaming video out to Ustream, so sorry about that. But we can see each other. So on my left, Christian Johnson. Christian is a website administrator and runs bios-mods.com, as well as a home server admin. No, a home server add-in writer, and just a pretty smart student in general. Just got done with midterms. Christian, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Yeah. Midterms over. What more can a fella ask for?
I know. And so when do you have to go back to school? Does it start all over again on Monday?
Oh, yeah. Third
quarter. So with midterms ending now, then they give you a couple weeks for Christmas. Doesn't that kind of suck?
Yeah, like, pretty much. It's like okay, you can go on a Christmas break now, but you have to study for midterms. No one does anyway. You end up cramming in the morning for the exam, but you know, it's easy yeah. going.
Well,
I'm out of the way.
I'm glad you're done, because I got some work that I need done on the site.
So, yeah.
So I'm kind of glad you're done. On my right, Brian Burgess. Brian is a writer for SimpleHelp.net, as well as he blogs for us right here at TheAverageGuy.tv. Brian, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good in the freezing chill that we have going on up here.
Yeah.
So, 12 below right now.
Really?
Yeah.
And the frozen.
It's going to get colder.
Yeah, that's right. It is. And so you just stay inside, right? You shovel every once in a while, and then you come back inside and stay warm.
I venture out as little as possible, right? Oh,
good stuff. Well, if you want to contact the show, and of course I'm Jim Collison, and if you want to contact the show, you can do that podcast@theaverageguy.tv. And if you've got ideas, things you'd like us to talk about, comments, suggestions, we won't always listen to them. But if you do want to send them in, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. If you want to get updates on what's going on with the show, if you want to know when it's starting or what's going on that particular week, I always send out a tweet. Early in advance, usually an hour or two beforehand. And on Twitter, I am just J Collison, Collison. Brian, you're what are you on Twitter?
At Mystic Geek.
At Mystic Geek. And we were talking pre-show. Christian doesn't have a Twitter account yet.
Not yet.
So he's a holdout.
I'm thinking about it. You're giving me some probable cause here.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, one of the questions I get most, and maybe let's just talk about it a little bit now, since you're asking that question, Christian. One of the questions I get from folks who don't use Twitter is why? Why am I compelled to use Twitter? So it's 140 characters. It's kind of like communication in the Stone Ages, right? I mean, it's just this quick. It's almost like texting, but it's on the computer. So Brian, let me throw that out to you. What do you use Twitter for? I mean, how do you use it?
Essentially, basically, what I use it for is promoting the show and promoting my writing. Kind of a shout box. Sometimes I'll, send out a message like, "Hey, I got a new iPad," or "I got a new whatever." But usually, it's for promotion.
Yeah, and I think how much of the Twitter sphere, if we can call it that, is people doing that? Because I do it too. That's what I use Twitter for. I mean, I communicate. One of the guys in the chat tonight, I communicate with him. We kind of message back and forth via Twitter. But the majority of what I put out on Twitter is advertising for the show, and when we put podcasts up, and when we write blogs and stuff like that. How much of Twitter is that? I mean, I think it's a lot, isn't it?
I'd say so. You know, the more I look at it, it's just a whole lot of bit.ly links and check this out, check that out.
So if everybody's advertising, who's listening? I guess that's my question. Who out there's actually listening? And there's got to be some, right? I mean, there's got to be. And I guess I listen to sometimes too, and I look for links and I click on them. I mean, do you do that as well? Do you kind of go through your feed, and are you compelled to click on some of these links from time to time?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sometimes. And I'll talk back to friends occasionally, but I'm more into using email. I instead. So
the old email, the old trusty spam infested email.
Yep.
You know, speaking of that, so Facebook, this isn't in the show notes, but this is just extra value that you're getting right here. Facebook is going to launch messaging, right? We talked about this maybe a couple weeks ago, but it's starting to roll out right now. What do you think of email? Well, first of all, I mean, there's the whole concept of Facebook hosting your email. But one of the beauties of email embedded inside Facebook is it's virtually spam-free because only your friends could spam you, right? You can only get email from people that you've let into your circle. What's wrong with that?
It's pretty much creating a whitelist as far as I know.
Yeah. Christian, do you see anything wrong with that?
Well, I don't see anything wrong with it. It's just if you already have Facebook as something that you're talking about, you're talking with your other friends, it's like what's the like I can send a message already to another friend. So if I'm only allowed to send emails with people within my circle, then it's kind of redundant, at least to me, to the messaging system that's already in there. Maybe I don't really fully – maybe I missed something there, but that's what it seems like to me.
Yeah. Well, it just seems to me that it would be really nice to – if I really just want to communicate with my friends and all my friends are on Facebook, that's a great way of not – because I just get spammed to death. I mean it's horrible. I have a pretty easy email address and I've had it since 1994, 3-4, something like that. And it gets just – I get the spam, I get spammed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in Facebook, I don't, and because it is a whitelist. Now, the one drawback is I might not be able to get emails, corporate emails and stuff like that I've subscribed to that I would have to let in. So maybe that wouldn't work so well. But it does, I do find myself in Facebook a lot more. Instead of sending folks an email, I'll find them on Facebook and send them a message.
Yeah, my whole thing is I don't really trust Facebook with my personal emails,
but you trust Microsoft?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I mean,
and Google.
Yeah. Christian, what were you gonna say?
I would never replace, if Facebook got to the point where it was like Google and you were able to email anyone or anything, I would never replace it in in a business type fashion. It would just be strictly for social, whatever.
Right. Well, what's going to happen is you're going to have the option. You can opt into this email, and you'll have the option of getting the email as your username on Facebook at facebook.com. I think I'll be honest with you. I'm a Jay Collison hoarder. I try to get whenever there's a new site, I go out there to get Jay Collison before anybody and any other Jay Collison gets it. And there's not a lot of us, but there's enough. So I'll probably snatch up that Jay Collison at Facebook.com. And we don't have enough listeners that they'll run out and beat me to that. And I don't think they can anyways. But so I'll probably take it. I might even use it. My Yahoo account is almost unusable at times. And I'll give it a try. I'll see how it goes. So, well, speaking of Facebook, this has nothing to do with that. But I made a bunch of changes on the site this week. So if you haven't been out to theaverageguy.tv in a couple weeks, a lot of folks started downloading the podcast, and I know you get that automatically now, but check out the site. So one of the things I did do, and if you're listening to the show for the first time or maybe it's your second podcast and you haven't subscribed to it, I added some subscription links down the right-hand column. That wasn't really laid out the best the first way I did it, and so I iterated today and put out the actual show player so you can play it right from the site. In fact, you don't even need to. So if you go out there right now, Brian's new post on how to configure Windows 7 update is there, and you'd be like, hey, how do I listen to a podcast? Well, just go to the right-hand column, and you'll see the Home Tech Podcast on the very top. You can now subscribe to it through iTunes, through your Google, what do they call that, Google Reader. And then there's a standard RSS feed out there as well. You know, a lot of folks have been asking me, guys, do I have a Zune link yet? And the guys at Zune won't get back to me. So I don't know what that is. I've submitted an application twice and no one's home. So no Zune integration yet. Actually, it's really easy on Zune. If you're a Zune player, you can just copy the RSS link and paste it right into the Zune podcast section, and it will automatically bring in all your album art, And then that podcast will automatically load each week. So if you're not doing that or you're not downloading podcasts regularly, whether it's our podcast or anybody else's, I find that horribly helpful. Brian, you've got a Touch. Do you download podcasts automatically to your iPod Touch?
No, actually, I'm usually at home, so I listen to them through Zune Player.
Okay.
At home.
And that setup working. Is that setup as easy as I just said it was? Copying a link into the player and just letting it find the
article. Oh yeah, or just finding it, you know, in the list of podcasts. Yeah.
Well, that's the problem. We're not in the marketplace yet, so I don't know what it takes to get in the marketplace on there. We are in the marketplace in iTunes. So if you search fitness tech or home tech, those are the two podcasts we do here at The Average Guy. Both of those can be found in the marketplace. So get out there and get that done today, and it's a great way. Christian, do you download podcasts for consumption later, or do you listen to everything live?
Mostly download. Obviously, I do the home service show on this live, but mostly download. There's a feature in Subsonic that lets me download them that automatically downloads all the shows, and also on iTunes, I have it configured to do that. So
perfect. Yeah, I forget you're a Subsonic guy.
Oh, yes.
I got to remember that. We talked a lot about that last week. So changes going on at the site. And, of course, we're all back in full swing. I've got a handful of things from CES that I still haven't posted yet, some video that we ran at CES. The stuff that I haven't posted yet won't get old. So in the next couple of weeks, I'll do up some blog posts, and we'll get that stuff posted out there. Brian, you and I didn't get a chance to chat since I got back from CES, and I did a lot of running while I was out there. So got some video of running upstairs. And I got some video of running to the Bellagio. So
yeah, I actually checked out those videos.
Very cool. Okay, well, want to get dig right into some news. And I think one of the things that came out this week, besides all the announcements of the shakeups at HP and Google, which we won't talk about, the most important thing is, and Christian, you and I were talking about this earlier, but the changes in the Netflix subscription policy. And so they have I don't think it's a huge one, but I want to kind of ask you guys. Christian, you watch movies on Netflix, right?
Yep.
And what kind of subscription do you guys have for Netflix?
The regular send one movie out, get one back, but you can watch on any streaming device.
Okay. And Brian, you're a Netflix guy. What's your subscription level?
I have the same one, the $7.99 that they're going to charge us a dollar more for here pretty quick.
Is that going up? I didn't hear that.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's one movie in and unlimited streaming at this point, right?
Right.
For up to one device. If you want to do for the internet streaming, if you have a plan where you get one movie out, you get one back, then you can stream from one IP address on the internet.
Really?
If you have the plan where it's two DVDs in or out, then it's two IP addresses. So if it's within your network of devices, so you can have your TV and your computer playing a Netflix movie at the same time. That's not a problem.
Okay.
But if you have a movie running in your internet browser here and you have another one running at work at the same time, it'll work, but you will be violating Netflix agreements, and they do check up on that.
Really? Did you know that, Brian?
No, I had no idea.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. That's a good tidbit of information. So
yeah.
We almost always watch them. You know, 99% of the time we watch them at home. And I don't use my Netflix account anywhere else. But I have the same plan. So it sounds like all three of us are on the same plan. Well, in a blog post out at Netflix.com, it was announced that Netflix is making a change to their service. Members would no longer be able to add DVDs to their queues on devices that they can use to stream movies. So Xbox 360, Wii, Roku, any of those devices, Blu-ray players that have Netflix. It seems like Netflix is enabled in everything at this point. I'm sure I missed a few there, but those devices. The idea is born from another that add to DVD queue option ties up valuable resources and would still be supported directly and only from the Netflix.com website. So my interpretation is that if I want to change my DVD queue, I got to go to Netflix.com to do that. Do you guys see any problems with that? I mean, personally, is that a problem to have to log into Netflix to change a queue?
I mean, it sounds like they're trying to phase out DVDs entirely, you know, which I'm sure they will eventually. Also, I read somewhere that it costs them more in postage than it does to stream, you know, the actual movie over the internet. So I don't know. I don't care. I'm always in front of my computer, so yeah. It doesn't really matter to me. But
yeah, Christian, does that matter to you?
Right. I guess the biggest thing is if you're one of those people that like rents the DVD and then adds the DVD to your server collection of movies or whatever, and adds that to your movie collection on home server or something like that, then yeah, that's probably something you would like. But really, I watch most of the stuff that's in instant queue. So really, if they were going to make the transition where they weren't going to do send the DVD to your mailbox, then it would seriously have to be all the movies are accessible on demand, because you can only really get the latest movies they put out there on demand most of the time. So a lot of the movies that I watch on there, though, are there on instant demand. All the good classics and top 250 from IMDb are normally on there. So, yeah, for the most part, instant streaming is the way to go.
Christian, do you think – what's the majority of your watching then? You said streaming is the majority for you?
Yeah, for me.
Brian,
streaming.
What about you?
I'm actually more of a DVD guy.
Yeah.
There's a lot that I want to watch that they don't have available for streaming, so other than documentaries.
Right.
So
yeah, and let's be honest, right? Their streaming selection isn't that great.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it's pretty weak, and I think even in the post I was reading from said it kind of sucks, and it's not great. Although one of the areas I think they're strong in is TV shows.
Yeah, they have like all the Stargate Universe series from Sci-Fi channels on there, and that's a relatively new series. So
yeah,
they are picking up and putting all those series on there quite frequently. I don't know if you can watch that. I believe you can watch it instantly. I'm not positive on that, though.
I think only series – or the season one is the only one available now. But let's not be total nerds. So like The Office is available. Most of the seasons of The Office are available.
Right.
On Netflix. So I think while they're having trouble, and I think that's because of distributorship, you know, the way different DVDs, you know, movie houses want to hold on to those, they want those DVDs to sell before Netflix puts them out in a streaming mode. We as consumers, we don't care. We're just like, give it to us the way we want it now.
Right. You know, I want it a la carte, you know. I don't want to pay a $50 a month cable bill for, you know, one channel that I'm going to watch, you know, for one show or whatever it is. So,
yeah, now we're on it. Hey, one of the guys in chat asked that he said, doesn't Netflix brand their own discs and copy protect them? And I hadn't heard of that. I don't believe that to be true. I think they're just retail copies of what you would buy at Target or Walmart, right?
Yeah, I've had no problem backing them up.
Very nice, Brian.
Wait, I mean, my friend.
Yes, for a friend. And Christian, tell your dad to stop yanking on your tie there.
Yeah, I know, right?
So, I do see. I've talked about this before, but I do see the streaming method taking over. I mean, I think Netflix does have a challenge to get they need to put some leverage, or they need to gain some leverage on the distributors so that they can stream those earlier, and they just got to get a better collection. I mean, it's just not great. So I think we're a ways before that'll dominate, but they are absolutely trying to limit the number of DVDs they send out via the mail, because it is very expensive for them to do that, and no longer provides the edge.
To your point there, Jim, they raised the rate $1, I think, for every account in hopes to get enough money to, you know, start getting better content with streaming.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I think that's interesting, because, like, you get the digital copies with some of these new DVD movies. Like with Inception, you would buy it and they would give you the Blu-ray disc, the DVD disc, and a digital copy where you could go to iTunes or whatever media place and you could download it as like a digital copy. So I guess that means they would expect you to be able to save it and put it on your library of stuff. So I find it interesting that some of them are willing to give these free digital copies as part of your purchase of your DVD, but then not let Netflix stream it right off the bat.
Yeah, we're definitely in a mode where there's some conflict in there, right? Where things aren't meshing up. The old school and the new school are not necessarily meshing up very well.
Right. Another point to bring up is if you want Blu-ray discs from them, I think it's $2 more per month.
Okay.
Right, yeah. But, I mean, just think about it in comparison to, like, if you have Verizon Fios or any of those cable providers in your area that you get video on demand and it's like $5 just to rent a movie for 24 hours. I mean,
right.
Obviously still Netflix is going to be the way to go.
Yeah. From a cost perspective, that's for sure. You know, we watch Netflix off the Wii and that video quality is not great, but you know, a lot of the shows we watch, I don't need great quality.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
So it's, you know, guys, I mean, I'll be honest, I think we're in the very, very early stages of getting all this media kind of worked out. The music industry went through this for a while, and I think it's finally hitting the movie industry. And I think we'll come to a point, and I don't know when that will be, but I think we'll come to a point pretty soon where everything is streamed. Now, the drawback, and every time I say that, the chat lights up and they say, well, what about in areas where I have limited bandwidth? And so that's absolutely the truth. So, you know, my good buddy John up in Canada, he has a cap on his internet, no cap on power, but he has cap on his internet. And he's not going to want to download every single movie. He would rather go out and buy them and save on his cap.
And, I mean, that's going to take years to phase out in terms of bandwidth caps. But I don't think internet companies are going to be able to hold bandwidth caps in the future that much longer, especially if you see like with Australia's government deciding to put in so much money into an entire new internet infrastructure that would reduce a lot of that problems where people are getting ridiculous charges for a little bit of bandwidth. I think it's going to come to a point where you get your X amount of cap, like with the Fios where I am, you get 35 megabytes down and up. And I mean, you can use and do as much as you want, which is pretty important for the stuff I do with constantly uploading files to FTP. I'm always downloading movies, you know, so I probably use a good handful of gigabytes per month downloaded and uploaded. So to have to think about, oh, you know, what's my cap, that'd be unfortunate. But
yeah.
For Netflix to benefit from that, it's going to come from the service providers first. Another Jim brings up a good point about the producers wanting to keep the money with the sale of the DVD by including that digital copy as incentive. So if you look at it that way,
yeah.
But just from not looking at outside of money point and just technology perspective, there's definitely a disconnect. So I think even though Netflix users would find it a huge discomfort and would probably revolt, having something set up where all your DVDs are available on demand, but some of them have like a 99-cent fee to bring up on demand, you know, that could be a possible thing that could be proposed and would make sense in terms of putting prices in mind and stepping in towards a technology direction. But really, they just kind of gotta, you know, get that together.
Yeah.
And there's really no simple answer, but I mean, that would be the quickest solution I could think of. But to the consumer, that's obviously not really much of a highlight.
Sure. Consumer doesn't care.
Yeah.
They just want their movies.
Yeah.
Right. So, all right. Well, good debate. I think we're at the very, like I said before, I think we're at the very early stages of this, and it's only just beginning. And I think there's more battles yet to come, and we'll have some things to overcome from a bandwidth perspective. Netflix certainly is going to feel the pressure from a pricing standpoint, and then you know they've kind of created a little bit of monopoly. We don't even talk about Blockbuster anymore. I mean, they filed bankruptcy, right?
Yeah.
Or Hulu.
Yeah, and Hulu was big last year, but boy, they, at least for me, they seem to have dropped out of contention as a, you know, content provider.
which yeah. is interesting. Yeah.
Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I don't like their interface. It's difficult. They charge too much. They don't offer enough content compared to Netflix in my mind. So it sounded like a good idea, but I think it's like you said, it's going to drop off the radar.
Yeah.
Now I have the Hulu desktop application, which I haven't used in a while, but I think it's still in beta. And I like that for watching all of the TV shows that I miss. So, like, if I'm too lazy, not lazy, to go down to the DVR and, you know, catch that episode I recorded, right. You can just stream it right to, you know, my HD computer screen through Hulu. And I get pretty good quality on that. I think it's, like, 720p. They may stream 1080p now. But, I agree with Brian in the sense that the internet site's still a bit obtuse for me, but I kind of like the direction they were heading in with the Hulu desktop application. I find that really slick. But when they were getting into pricing, I thought for them they would make more money trying to capitalize on the advertisements that they already had when putting them into the show. But yeah, as like a price service, no way. I would never even think about Hulu.
Yeah,
but
$10 a month, you know, plus more ads, it seemed like, that
right,
they're
yeah.
adding in there, you know, it's like, yeah. come on.
Well, it's kind of like YouTube, too, kind of going corporate with all those random ads, and this is within the last year and a half or so that they started, you know, some of the videos, not all of them, but some of them, you'll click on them, and it'll say, oh, sorry. Well, not all sorry, but you'll get a 30-second advertisement that you have to watch before you get the video, especially with some of the music artists where they put that stuff up on Vevo. There's sometimes an ad. So I think they're all trying to balance out where the right balance is between ads on the internet and actually charging as a service. But if they charge as a service, they shouldn't be doing advertising because they're getting that revenue. And they should make a pricing plan that reflects that.
Yeah. You know, the number one complaint I get in the chat room, both at the Home Service Show and here, is the ads that are played on Ustream when you first log in. And so there's got to be a compromise. I mean, we know you can't provide free content without some kind of advertising, right? I mean, that's just the way right. it is. Yeah. But sometimes those ads are a little obnoxious and
you can't skip them either.
No, well, what would be the point of having the ads if you could skip them, right?
Right. No, but I think Ustream does it pretty nicely. I mean, they're not really obtuse about it. You play the ad and you get it out of the way.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. They don't play them during the middle of a stream, which is nice, right? So they won't pop up as you're listening to the show. But it does catch some folks off guard when they first log in, and that's the thing I hear is, oh, you got to listen to the ad. I think Brian, you mentioned that tonight when we logged in, and so. There's a lot of money out there, and there's a lot of money that's being perceived to be lost, and so there's a lot of folks holding on to a lot of rights, at least at this point, until we get there. But I think there's never been more ways to get media, right? I mean, there's just a million ways to watch media at this point, whether it's on any of those devices or a DVR. You know, you mentioned DVR. You can old school it with a DVD, and I never thought I'd say you can old school it with a DVD. but there's lots of ways to do that. I think let's relate this to the average user. I think, you know, my mom, who's the average, maybe she's not the average user, but let's use my siblings, right? My brothers and sisters. They don't have a clue what any of those things do. You know, they're lucky if they understand Netflix. That's probably most of them use that. But Hulu and Play to my TV and DLNA compliance and that kind of stuff, that's still a little out there for most people.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay.
They're still. I cut my cable cord. I mean, years ago.
Really?
Because
you're cable free, huh?
Oh yeah. What do I need it for?
Yeah.
You know?
No, and you know what? I should cut it too. I just did a deal with them during the football season where I got some free cable.
Well, see football. Yeah, that's kind of the...
Yeah, and so I got some free channels during the fall so I could watch college and pro football. And then when I tried to take it off, of course, they didn't drop it all the way back down to the price it had been before, and I had to argue with them. And I shouldn't say I have to argue. They did take care of it. But Brian, there's a lot of people saying they're going to cut their cable and go all – I imagine I could do that if I needed to. I mean, I only pay $17 for my basic cable, so I just leave it on because it brings us 27 channels. You know, the local ones plus TBS and WGN and TLC, right? Yeah. Those are the ones. But I think I could get most of that content online.
Well, and even a lot of sports are starting to come online.
Yeah.
Like with ESPN3, you're showing me, you know, so.
Yeah, now the beauty of ESPN3 is my Cox Cable here is also our internet provider, and that is, I think that's premium content for most people. Cox pays that, and I get it for free as a Cox Cable internet customer. But I don't think that's free to everybody. I think your cable provider has to pay for it. So anyways, tons of stuff out there. We could talk all night about media. Maybe we'll come back to this. But watch Netflix if you're a Netflix subscriber. I think there's some changes coming. And if you're not streaming, you're probably going to be forced into – and that's probably too strong of a word. But you're probably going to have to do some streaming here at some point in time and different ways to do it. So anyways, good discussion, guys. I want to move on. Brian, you put a post out there just a few hours ago, actually, on theaverageguy.tv talking about Windows Update. So why don't we take a few minutes, walk through that a little bit. Windows Update has evolved greatly over the last 4 years. It's not the clunky machine it used to be. Talk a little bit about your post.
Well, essentially, if you've been using Windows since XP, like you're saying, you probably know about the importance of keeping the OS up to date, and it protects against vulnerabilities, provides stability to the operating system. During the XP days, it seemed like they had a new update rolling out every week, but now, you know, it's called Patch Tuesday, the third week. The third Tuesday of every month, where they roll out a bunch of known patches and fixes for vulnerabilities. You know, occasionally they will send out an update if it needs to be, you know, if there's a security flaw that needs to be fixed earlier in the month that comes up, like a zero-day attack or something like that. But you definitely want to keep it up to date. If you're working on the average person's computer, just set them to automatically update. Now, we all know that sometimes updates can break other programs, but there are ways of rolling back those updates, you know, so you don't,
Brian,
don't have to worry about it.
Let me jump in on that real quick. You know, I remember in the 90s, updates breaking things.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had an update break, and Christian, chime in on this. I haven't had an update break anything since I can remember. I mean, do you more hacking than I do. Christian, do you see problems with updates in stuff that you're doing? I just don't see them.
In XP, there were a couple weird things I've run into. I've seen boxes that were updated from Service Pack 1 to 2, and this is back in XP days, that just, you know, you rebooted and they were done. I had another box when I did the upgrade to Service Pack 3 that decided to install an Intel driver on an AMD box or vice versa, something where it saw the ACPI power different because they had similar model numbers, so the updates got fooled into thinking it was the other brand.
Oh, okay.
And you had to go into safe mode and fix that up. But other than that, the Vista Windows 7 update platform has been pretty stable. I'd say if there's any one particular update that can have problems easily, if not done correctly, is the .NET frameworks. Sometimes if you install them out of order or if you start one and cancel it, then it just gets really ugly and hard to complete all the successful installations.
Okay. Go ahead, Brian.
Oh, I was just going to say, just agreeing with Christian, the .NET ones are the most difficult, definitely. But I think the gaming community complains about a lot more than, you know, the average user, or I don't know if any of us are major gamers, but I know a lot of times they complain about it breaking, like Black Ops or, you know, whatever game they're playing. But I honestly, I haven't had any problem with any of the updates in Windows 7. Actually, since Vista.
Yeah, you know, in the enterprise environment, we always shut those updates off because we were afraid, you know, again, this would have been the 90s. We were afraid of those updates breaking things and taking down mission critical, you know, desktops. And so the philosophy was a lot different back then. It was make sure they're all tested and you know, make sure in a lot of cases we only did them at the service pack level. So we would wait for all those roll-ups to create a big service pack, and then we'd do it all in one shot. I think anymore, especially with the vulnerabilities and the average user at home, probably, like you said, Brian, probably just wants to let those roll and let those update on schedule. One thought I had, of course, is, you know, you mentioned every third Tuesday of the month, Security Essentials runs every day. So you get an update for Security Essentials every day.
Yeah, and I actually mentioned that in the post. So I would, if you're running Microsoft Security Essentials, I would definitely, you know, have it automatically update every day so you're current and protected. But yeah, in the corporate environment, yeah, I totally understand. I used to work in that environment, and you know, proprietary software can get hairy with those updates, and you really want to be careful with your servers and updating those. And
particularly bad with banking software. For whatever reason, my experience has been that banks run some just weird software behind the scenes, and it seemed like no matter what we did, whenever we installed something new, we broke it. You know, it had some large compatibility issues. But anyways, I think you're right. It's the gaming folks. There's been some talk in chat about OEM drivers versus, you know, on these updates, right? Sometimes if you've installed the OEM drivers or the native drivers that come with these cards, sometimes Microsoft, right, built in Windows 7 are all kinds of additional drivers, some of them from Microsoft, some from the manufacturer. It tries to update some of those things. I think at times that can cause problems. In chat, there's been talk of it hosing a network driver on a particular laptop. So it does happen.
Yeah. Or if you have older hardware that you're trying to run, you know, that could cause a problem as well. But I would say, you know, if you have a fairly modern computer, you're running Windows 7, and just keep them updating at least once a week, because you never know if, Microsoft might roll out something, you know, that's critical during the week, you know, and they weren't expecting it. So
now, Brian, you've got some options, right? You don't. It's not all or nothing, right? There's a couple options that you have to choose of when to download it and when to install it, as built into the settings. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah, you can choose to have it completely automatically set it and forget it. You could have Windows Update download the updates, let you know that they're available, and choose whether, you know, you want to install them or not. Or you could check for updates, but let you choose when to download and install them. Or you could select never check for updates and just do it manually. I wouldn't recommend that for the average person.
Yeah, if you're the kind of guy that likes to tinker with your box and you want to do it yourself.
Yeah, I don't have mine run automatically at all, so, but I'm not, you know, recommending that average guy.
So that's what you do, right? I mean, you install all your own updates?
Yep.
Christian, what about on your box there? Do you the new box that you just built, is that all automatic?
Yeah, everything's set for automatic updates. The only updates I don't install, which come with the Windows 7 Ultimate, is the
34
packs.
Yeah,
are really annoying.
You can shut that off, can't you? You can ignore
you can
those.
Hide them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
you
if you if you do hide them, you can unhide them, right? I mean, it's right.
But yeah, I would say, even though I let all the updates automatically install and stuff, I manually will go in myself and make sure my drivers are up to date, because Microsoft update servers are normally behind on the drivers compared to the latest releases from.
Yeah, that's one thing I've noticed, especially with my NVIDIA drivers.
Right.
They're always a couple generations behind. So,
which I think they do that because they have to go through some kind of, the WHQL certification for the driver to be actually something that works with a Microsoft product before they put it up on their update server. So that's why you can get later versions from NVIDIA, but technically it's still the latest certified version from Microsoft, because they don't check those updates from the vendor right away.
So, guys, I want to update my video card, right, in my PC. And so I go to Best Buy and I pick up a $99 NVIDIA card, you know, just because I want something a little bit better than the stock one that came with my desktop. And so I put that in, and, of course, chances are Windows 7 is going to find that, and it's going to load some drivers to it, right? And it's going to work pretty well. But is there an advantage for me to go out to NVIDIA and get the most recent drivers from the manufacturer and install that? You know, it always seems like it's not just the drivers. It comes with some kind of software package as well to help you kind of work with that. Is there a serious advantage to doing that, or should I just let Windows 7 manage it for me?
Well, unless you're having specific problems with the PC in terms of instability, probably not. If you're a hardcore gamer and you feel like you're going to get two more FPS with the latest drivers, you know, go buck wild and go get that download. But just to use Windows, and if that's the driver Microsoft feels is most appropriate, I mean, just leave it. It's not like it's gonna drastically change your performance with the card.
Brian, what do you think?
I feel the same way. Yeah, I mean, it just wait, but sometimes it's such a long wait.
Yeah,
I'll go in and look at what, you know, say NVIDIA has on their website, and it's so much newer, I'll just go ahead and get it from the website. But yeah, for the average user, just let things roll. Set it and forget it.
Sure. Yeah.
Bandit had mentioned, F3 Bandit and Chad had mentioned that some of that, and I feel the same, some of that software, you know, you get drivers, but sometimes you get additional software. And sometimes that software is bloatware, right? I mean, it's just garbage, junkware that you didn't really need. So I think you got to be careful with that too. Be careful before you put that on. And if it is, just you can always uninstall it. All right. Want to talk a little bit about? I think we can move on from that. Brian, you got a new toy in the last week or two, and what do you think of your iPad?
Well, I've only had it for a few days, but so far I'm really enjoying it. It's a little heavier than I thought, but that's due to the, you know, it's got the backlit monitor and everything,
Yeah,
it's got a lot more real estate, and you know, I've been using the iPod Touch for so long, but you can't really read on it. And if you want to run bigger applications, you know, I mean, it's too small.
Yeah.
You know?
What made you pull the trigger on the iPad now versus waiting for the summer?
Well, yeah. That's the issue, you know. I buy it now, and in 2 months, the new one's going to be out.
Yeah.
But right now, Apple's selling them cheaper. So,
what was the price point on that?
I got mine refurbished.
Okay.
But their refurbs come with a full warranty, just like a brand new one, and it was $429.
And that's Wi-Fi?
Yeah, this is just the Wi-Fi 16.
So, so that's $499 model. Regularly, $429 refurb from Apple's website.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
And what's the number one thing you're using it for at this point? Even though it's only been a couple days, what's the number one thing you're using it for?
Reading. It makes a great reader with the Kindle app.
Okay, so Kindle is your app of choice?
So far, yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Okay. Christian?
And you can watch videos on it, you know, play games. I mean, it's really versatile.
Yeah.
It's got the other nice thing about it is the larger keyboard. So I really like that, and I like the fact that I can actually watch Netflix on it, you know, just set it up, you know, and watch my movie wherever I am. And
yeah,
I don't have to stare at a small, you know, tiny screen. So.
Right, right. Christian, do you have an Apple product of choice?
I don't have the iPod or anything, but no, wrong way. I don't have the iPad or anything, but I do have my Chromatic blue iPod with 8 nice. Gigabytes, which, you know,
yeah,
it's one of those cute things. But I mean, it really, the only thing that really fascinates me about it, which I still haven't understood myself, is why the battery life on this is just unbelievable. I get days of use out of this thing mm-hmm. without even having to charge it.
Well, no hard drive,
cool.
right? No spinning hard drive.
Right.
That
yeah,
has
I
a
guess.
Solid state, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, this is. I like this. It's a slick setup. But yeah, iPhones don't really appeal to me for what I do. I'm a Winmo guy, probably always will be. But the iPad is pretty sweet, I gotta admit. But also to keep in mind is the Nook, which might go Android.
That would be a real coup.
Yeah.
To be honest. A Nook yep. with Android on it would be pretty fabulous. So, and Nook is Barnes & Noble, right?
Right.
Yeah. So there's a lot of – we saw a lot of tablets at CES, a lot of things running Android. I think this is going to be the year of Android, I'll be honest with you. Certainly when the iPad 2 comes out, there will be a lot of excitement generated around that. But we will see a lot of Android in 2011. So I think
– What tablet did you like best there at CES?
You know, I didn't get enough time to really dig in. I saw them in passing. We were spending a lot of time looking at hardware and storage devices. I was, you know, hanging out with Dave from the Home Server Show. So I didn't get a chance. We just saw a lot. There was a lot of talk. I actually think there was more talk than there were tablets, to be honest. but there were quite a few, and I just think, boy, Android's really catching on. Of course, you know, that's and I don't know what the latest numbers are on Android versus iOS for numbers, but I know they're neck and neck, and they're both selling a lot of them. So it's certainly those are two to watch for sure. You guys were talking about your iPods, and so this is mine, which is an old school Shuffle. It's about as big as you know how big those are. They're not very big at all. This is right before they came out with the chewing gum size ones that talk to you.
Sure.
And I think they've gone back to this form factor. But running long distance, I can get, you know, a couple hours of music on here. It clips right onto my shorts, and it's very light. And so for a runner, I can even clip this on my shirt, and it works really well for running. It's not like I'm screwing with the iPod while I'm running, you know.
Well, you wouldn't want that.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know.
Yeah.
I'd be worried about it falling out of my pocket or whatever.
Yeah. Well, you'd be surprised at some of the – I've seen some pretty big devices on folks' arms, you know, when they're running. And I couldn't imagine – I just could not imagine having my Epic, you know, my Sprint Epic or Samsung Epic on my arm. I mean, it would, like, weigh me down. I would lean
yeah.
side as I was running.
You're running with your iPod. Or iPad.
There you go. That you didn't get like a backpack, you know, put the iPad in your backpack.
Well, yeah, exactly.
And do that.
Yeah, well, and those screens can break from sweat too. One of my friends was working out holding the iPod, and when he was done like an hour later, the screen was like all discolored and destroyed because his hands were so sweaty.
Yeah. You know what I do with my phone? So we have cellophane wrap around our towels, right? When they come in from the towel service, mm-hmm. they come in these big green, you know, cellophane wrapped, or they're wrapped in this green cellophane. I just take my phone and I wrap it in that cellophane and tear it off, and then twist up the ends, and so it's completely wrapped in a layer or two of that cellophane, and it keeps it completely moisture free. Hmm. So it's one of the cheapest, easiest ways I found to protect your phone or your whatever iPod especially if you're going to carry it in your pocket. Or I have a little belt that I use. Well, in the summer, all that perspiration from my body will leak right through that belt, and it doesn't take much to get into the moisture to get into your phone for your phone to be ruined. So I always tell people, make sure you get those electronic devices wrapped up in something. I tried the cellophane, you know, like the cling wrap stuff you get at the store. It's not sticky enough, right? It doesn't have the stuff we get on our towels, this industrial strength stuff, really has what it takes to kind of stick to the phone and really protect it. So there's a low tech solution to a high tech problem. And I use that quite a bit. So speaking of the iPad, so the iPhone came out on Verizon this last week, and a lot of talk, at least in – I mean, that even made national news. I mean, that's a big deal that AT&T's exclusive rights to the iPhone is over. Does that – you know, Christian, you just said you're a Winmo guy, and you're probably never going to go to an iPhone. Brian, how's that going to play out for you? Does that matter?
It's not going to matter to me at all.
You're in the sticks, like, and you can't get cell coverage anyways, right?
Well, I get Sprint out here, yeah. And I use the prepaid phones, and I don't care.
But you have a Touch at this point, and you have a third or fourth generation Touch? Or
it's a fourth gen, but it's Wi-Fi.
Okay.
So...
yeah, and that works. I mean, that's basically an iPhone without being able to make a phone call, right?
Well, yeah, unless you were to use something like Skype, or there's other apps that let you do it over Wi-Fi,
right? Fring and some of those other ones. I think the important thing to note here is I think we're going to see the iPhone on Verizon here pretty quick, and I think it'll be – and I haven't heard any news of it coming out on Sprint, so I don't know for those poor Sprint customers if they're ever going to get a decent phone. Although I shouldn't say that. I got the Epic, and I think it's a decent phone. But if you've been on Verizon and you've been waiting for the iPhone, wait is what I say.
Definitely wait.
It's just a 3G. It's not even their newest phone, and they have a whole new series of phones coming out. So if you're in a contract, don't break it. This is just my advice. It's my opinion. If you're in a contract, don't break it. If you absolutely have to have an iPhone and you're on Verizon, well, at least it's there and you can go do it. But I think I'd wait a little bit before I made the change.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah. I mean, Apple comes out with something new every 3 months, it seems like. So just hold off, wait for the new version, and then if you want to switch carriers, go for it. A lot of people will have to break their contracts. I don't know how, you know, all that's going to work or what. So.
Certainly don't pay $300 to break your contract so you can have an iPhone. It's just not worth it. So, well, we have a new segment. We were giving Christian a hard time about this before we started. But we have this new segment, and Brian's going to write a little jingle for it. But it's called Christian's Corner, and Christian's going to talk a little bit about some very small PCs. So, Christian, what did you find, and why'd you like it?
Well, this really new, intriguing product by CompuLab came out called the PC3, which is going to be the replacement for their current PC2, and it's literally the coolest thing I've ever seen in a while. It's this really, really thin, small, and compact AMD-powered computer, 4 gigabytes of DDR RAM, almost a 2 gigahertz processor, 6 USB ports, and it's fully Windows 7 compatible, dual eSATA, HDMI out. It's got all the goods, and I'm still fascinated that it fits in this little box. And for those of you who are out on the stream, looks like Jim already beat me to it, but that is the link, and you can just see how small and compact that is. So I'm thinking, you know, this is an ideal example of going beyond the net top, where net tops are normally a little bit bigger in size. But I mean, this is something like if you're running a coffee shop and you want to have an internet cafe and you don't know what the best solution is, well, buy a couple of these, you know, mount them under the bar, and what do you know? You have a fully working PC. So one of the things I don't think it has is a Wi-Fi card, I want to say. But, I mean, to have the latest Radeon HD 6300, which is a really nice mobile chipset, and all this good hardware in such a tiny space is pretty cool. And we saw with PC2 that it was Intel-based and Atom, and that worked with Windows 7. So this should be a huge build on top of that, especially for AMD's Fusion line. And, you know, for a price range from $300 to $700, it's intriguing for some people. I don't really think this is something that is that would appeal to mainstream yet. But for those techie enthusiasts who want something really small and powerful, I mean, this is smaller than an external hard drive, and it's got so much power in it. It would be a cool gadget to have around.
Yeah, they really are. You know, for me, the application would be we've got PCs all over our church and various classrooms and out in front powering kind of media center stuff, you know, that show PowerPoints and videos. We're using kind of old school PCs to fulfill those spaces. And so this would be great because I could really mount one of these just about anywhere, run Windows 7 on them and a version of Office and or whatever we need to display PowerPoint and or whatever software they want. And they would be nice and light and compact, and they fit just about anywhere.
Right.
Yeah. What about – so when we were at CES, we saw some products from Zotac. And I don't know if you guys – when I say that, you guys know what I'm talking about? You've ever seen Zotac boards? They're also mini HTPC-like.
ITX.
Yeah, ITX. Very small. You know, about the size – maybe about 10 by 10. I think that's the size the standard size that those come in, and a lot of those are kind of playing in this space as well, where you can have, you know, just the thing I liked about these, Christian, no fans.
Yeah. So, and especially with now, granted, it's a mobile chipset, so it's going to have that, but a Radeon 6300 in that space just mind boggles me. I mean, to take that thing apart and see what it actually looks like has got to be pretty cool. Yeah. So yeah, I'm surprised they can run that kind of chipset hardware without much, well, with no cooling really.
Now the one in the first picture, I think, or the first link we put out there, and we'll have all these links in the show notes for you if you're listening to the recorded version of this. But it's mounted on a piece of plexiglass. And, which I think is just really cool. We talked about that on the Home Server Show way back about displaying your computer as a piece of art, because there's right. I mean, there's so it's not just enough anymore to, you know, have a cool looking box. I mean, think back to those Alienware boxes and such.
Yeah.
Right? But right. to leave that PC kind of out and in the open, and now I know they did this for purposes so people could see how small the components are, but I'd love to, honestly, I'd throw that on my wall.
You know? No, I would.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and put some cool lights on it and some, you know, when we were at CS, Dave and I saw his board from Gigabyte that had literally, it had a clip, like a machine gun clip mounted, you know, it was to make it look kind of tough onto the board. Right?
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, you wouldn't do that if you were hiding the board.
No.
You know, this is a board to be displayed, and it had really cool lights embedded to it and stuff. So I think we're moving on that. In this picture as well, they have a mini slim DVD player that's hidden underneath the board. So the board's on probably one of those. Are those inch and a half stands that come off that piece of plexiglass, maybe an inch and a half. Mm-hmm. And buried underneath that is a slim – what would really be cool is a slim slot-loaded DVD. This one looks like it has a tray, but if you could get a slim slot loader underneath there, that well, and it's basically a Mac Mini, right, or a Dell. What was the Dell line where they were competing?
XPS? No.
No, they're small. You know, 6-inch form factor or 8-inch form factor. Chad, help us out. What were the Dell ones that were small? Zeno, thank you. See, that's my chat. That's why you got to be in our chat room while we're talking, while we're on the show, because you get to help us out with this kind of stuff. The Zeno, yeah, real small slot loading, can go anywhere, could fit anywhere. That kind of PC form factor is really attractive to me. I mean, I don't – the days of these big boxes and towers – now my kids just built gaming rigs, and you know, you need a forklift to move it around the basement. You know, they're big honking boxes. But those days got to be – we got to be close to being on the end of those days, don't we?
Yeah. I'd sure hope so. I mean, you know, what's the power consumption of something this small, you know?
Yeah, well – didn't we look, Christian, what did that say?
I forgot what we...
8 watts?
It was either 8 or 18, I think.
Yeah, 18. Says, well, the dual-core one, 1.6 gigahertz while pulling down 18 watts.
Yeah.
The other one...
But that's at full speed, you know?
Yeah. The one that you showed me, the two, the PC2i, it says... Right. It says the rig is built from 100% aluminum die-cast body, and even at full load, it sucks down just 8 watts.
Yeah, that's great. No, that's phenomenal. But, you know, what's our advice to, as this market becomes larger for microarchitecture and these micro PCs, where should the average guy be thinking about purchasing one of these? Is it really relevant to what they do? We know a lot of stuff is going to be coming out with Android, a lot of products that people aren't going to know how to use right off the bat because it's all new stuff. So are we going towards a early adoption advice or kind of let it ride out and see what people think about it first?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I'd mention I'd use them today if I could run Windows 7 on them today because of the office requirements that I have for business. Certainly, they make a great kiosk computer, right, in an area where you need a little more power. Certainly, you know, I don't think, and I could be wrong here, but I don't think the iOS – well, and I could be wrong. I'm going to say this, and then you can correct me. The iOS or Android or even the Windows phone OS is ready to handle media.
Yeah.
So if I was in a kiosk and I was displaying I was watching movies or movie clips or showing PowerPoint presentations. Now, I could be totally wrong there. I don't know. Brian, you've got a touch and now you have an iPad. Would you be pretty comfortable running a PowerPoint presentation right off that iPad?
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. There's already software for it.
Yeah, now that I say that. And the new iPads are coming with dual core processors. So that's even probably better. So, you know, Christian, when you were saying that, what I was thinking, and I'm just doing this off the cuff, and I reserve the right to be wrong. As I was thinking about this, I was thinking, yeah, these devices with mobile OSs on them would just absolutely rock. And if I could do what I... You know, most of the time I'm surfing the web. So I can surf the web on the iOS, right? I can invoke a web browser. What if I throw Chrome browser on this or the Chrome OS? What if I were to run one of these with a super light Chrome OS on it and everything was browser based? So, all right, but I just quickly went into the enthusiast stuff, didn't I?
Yeah.
Well, so, then you got to worry about your data being into the cloud.
Yeah, there you go. Well, the average guy can operate an Android phone, I think. I think we know that.
Yeah.
So put Android on top of one of these and in a touch screen screen of some kind. Yeah, maybe so.
Well, even it's like the Evo 4G from Sprint has HDMI out, so like that's presentation worthy already, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For putting stuff up. Like if you go somewhere and you want to watch a movie, you just plug it into the TV, you know.
So for the average guy whose computing needs are small, some word processing, some light office applications, some web stuff, they might use the cloud for some of their storage. Maybe not all of it, but some of it. Or they've got an infrastructure at home where they can store their data to a NAS or another device. A device that we don't call Drobo anymore, or a Windows Home Server. I think you could get away with one of these running Windows 7.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. The PC3 runs Windows 7 apparently really well. I think where it would fall short for some people is really media. I know the Atom processors can handle 720p relatively well and kind of hobble along with 1080p, but like I don't know, I haven't checked the specs, but I doubt this thing is really tuned and maximized for audio performance. So okay. If you're someone who really likes listening to music on your PC, then this small PC3 thing probably isn't really the way to go. It's definitely not something I would adopt as like a mainstream type device, but I would definitely, sure, if when it goes on market, I would consider its purchase. Some of these larger net tops, though, would definitely meet all those needs for audio and media and that kind of stuff, and they aren't that much more expensive.
Yeah, and it looks like it has DirectX 11 capable GPUs, so.
Right. I mean,
hey, as long as it can run radio. Angry Birds, right? That's all you need.
Yeah.
There's one game left in the world, and it's Angry Birds.
The late 14-year-old iPhone genius, his game just superseded Angry Birds as the number one downloaded game on the market.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's called Bubble something, yeah.
Wow.
Got 2 million downloads, so if he had sold it at...
It's called Bubble Ball.
Yeah.
Is it free, or did he sell it?
It's free right now, but imagine if he had sold it for 99 cents, would have made $2 million off it.
Would it have been as popular if it wasn't free?
I don't know. I'm pretty sure he has plans to make his next one 99 cents for his second app, but good luck to him.
Christian, you're getting called out in chat for calling Sprint evil. Is there a reason you called Sprint evil? Was that you?
I didn't call Sprint.
Oh, was that you, Brian?
No, I love Sprint.
Oh, did somebody else?
I advocate and honor the Now Networking.
Okay. right. Somebody, F3 Bannon, had said evil Sprint, and must have been another discussion up there. Yeah, I'm a Sprint customer, and I've been a long-time Sprint customer. You know what? I think they're all about the same. I mean, it depends where you live, and the network's going to vary, you know, depending upon your location. Certainly AT&T gets hammered in the Bay Area and on the East Coast with all those iPhones. But,
you know, Paul Thurrott, he was talking the other day on his podcast, and he said he's only dropped one call on his, what was it?
On his Windows phone.
AT&T.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I think I definitely think we'll wrap up here, but I think that the iPhone has some manufacturing problems with the antenna, and I think it has problems dropping calls. But you know, people love the iPhone, so what are you going to do? They'll wait in line for it. They'll sell their children for it. They'll do whatever they can. But
yeah. when they switch over, it's going to be a madhouse.
Yeah,
just but wait.
I'm surprised that they chose AT&T in the first place to be their exclusive provider for the iPhone. I didn't think that
they're global.
Yeah,
right?
but think about how much more successful as a network, in my opinion, Verizon is over AT&T.
Yeah, but Verizon probably held out for more money.
Right. Well, they got it. So that's interesting for me. Yeah, I agree with F3 Bandit, who you guys may or may not know, is one of my moderators at BIOSMods.com.
Oh, very, very cool.
He's a rising star. I agree. AT&T is pretty close to the devil in my book.
the devil themselves.
Yep.
It's the devil. Well, guys, good stuff tonight. If folks want to comment on any of that, anything that we talked about, and you know, we, like I said earlier, we do reserve the right, or at least I do, to be wrong. If you've got a correction or something you want to add in there, certainly send us an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. You can hear tomorrow. Well, yeah, you'll be if you're listening to this recorded, it'll already be out there, obviously. But you can go out to the post itself and leave a comment for us if you'd like. We don't have a forums built yet. I'm kind of waiting for some more listenership before we try and kick off some kind of forums. So the best way to do that is either send us an email or drop a line right there on the website at theaverageguy.tv. Remember, we did some changes to that, and if you've had trouble in the past finding the podcast, they're now right on the right column in the sidebar, and you can listen to them right from there, or you can dig into the posts. We often include show notes in the posts. Brian's been helping me dig all those links out, as well as some comments, and make sure we have a good set of show notes for you if you want to go back and reference anything we talked about. So They will all be right there. Just a reminder, you can follow us. You can at least follow me and Brian on Twitter. I'm Jay Collison, and Brian is Mystic Geek on Twitter, and you'll get the latest of what's going on with us, as well as all the fun advertising, right, that we do. We're advertisers, so Brian and I don't – you'll never catch Brian or I saying I'm having lunch at Qdoba, right?
I'm eating chips on my couch.
I'm petting the cat.
Yeah.
computer out on lunch break.
Yeah, that doesn't happen on our Twitter. But you will get the latest home tech show has been, you know, the latest home tech show is out. You can go to this link and look at it. So we do that kind of stuff on Twitter. All right, guys, thanks for taking the time tonight and doing this. Appreciate you guys coming out on a cold, blustery Thursday night. You guys have much snow on the ground there in Buffalo, Christian?
It got really warm. Then it dropped down to 1 degree, and then it got really warm again. So now we're kind of back in the 20s. There's just a couple good inches of ice and snow. So
yeah.
We'll take it.
You know we're all podcasters because we live in northern climates, right? And there's nothing to do in the winter but sit and podcast. We'll do it all over again next week. We record on Thursday nights sometime between 7 and 8. It kind of depends on our schedule. I'm leaning more towards 7, but tonight we are on at 8, and that's 8 Central Time here in the U.S. If you're listening overseas, love to have you in chat, and you need to have a Ustream account to join us in chat. So if you're going to come out and join us, go ahead and get that done before you come out. TheAverageGuy.tv/live is the way to do it, and we'll see you right back here next week. Guys, have a great week, and we'll see everybody back here next week for the Tech Show. Nice. Yeah. That's what we should say. Guests, please decloak by signing into Ustream.
There you go.
So we can see you. So we have two new terminologies tonight. We have Christian's Corner and we have decloak. We'll probably go live with Ustream as well. And it's great for the listeners to see that too. You just have to be careful. You know, I caught Christian yawning back there. You know, or picking your nose or whatever. So.